Fam, full disclosure, I've known Kimberly 26 years. But even with us both being from Detroit and practically mirroring each other's steps in school and as former journalists, we've never had a real conversation about our journeys as Black women TV writers in Holly Weird. So, it was my absolute joy to laugh and chop it up with my resilient friend as she shared how 3 phone calls, not text messages, changed her life. How she couldn't have made it without finding her village as a single mom. How challenging herself to do stand-up comedy helped her overcome fear, and there's so much more. Take a listen and enjoy Kim dropping gems, fam. After you experience our conversation and her work in progress, you'll be encouraged to face your own life challenges. Trust. You'll also gain insights about sitcom and stand-up writing. And I promise you, you'll never look at Mickey and Minnie Mouse the same. Hey fam, I'm your host Moniz, and welcome to Works in Progress, Conversations with Storytellers.
Oh, you did it!
Oh, it's so good to see you. Come on in here, girl. Right. You thirsty?
Yes!
Chapter 1. Smells like money to me. Kimberly Allen.
Okay.
I love your place.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Welcome mi casa su casa.
All right. You say that now.
You're going to be showing up.
You're over here. You be like, hey, it's like, you do got a place to live, don't you?
Okay. Hi, family. Listeners, watchers. This is my girl, Kimberly Allen, Detroiter. What up, though?
What up, though?
TV writer extraordinaire, comedian.
Oh, thank you, baby.
And she's coming to hang out with me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
You know, if Detroit's don't look out for each other, who will, girl? It's us against everybody,
you know,
right?
Detroit versus everybody.
Yeah. Man, so let's just get into it, girl, because we've known each other. Let's start our origin story, okay? Let's start with the origin story.
Right? Oh, God.
We got some. You said, oh, God. Why you say, oh, God?
Because it's okay. A lot. Right.
So I'm from Detroit. You from Detroit.
Yeah.
Right. And then we both went to Golightly Vocational School.
Yes. Oh, I loved it.
Yeah. So what were you doing there, Golightly?
Oh, my gosh. That was like heaven for me. I remember, so I was going to Osborne.
Okay.
And I was to Osborne, and around, I would say, 10th, 11th, end of 10th grade, 11th grade, mm-hmm. A friend of mine told me about it. She's like, you know what? They have this new mass media program.
Yeah.
And because they know, everybody who knew me on the block knew I was always into.
You was always that kid that was writing, telling stories. Doing plays in the backyard. Did you do
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, making up stuff. And so she's like, I think you would love this. And so, you know, I called the school myself. I did all the footwork myself.
Oh.
And then the counselor was like, well, you know, the counselor was just not hip to the scene at all. I had to like go in the counselor's office and say, look, I need to go to the school.
Mm.
So that's how I ended up going to the school. And it was.
Well, for me, I was at King High School.
Okay.
And Golightly wasn't that far from King, but I didn't know nothing. I was in an engineering program of all things.
Oh.
That's the whole, exactly. That whole reaction right there. Why? Why was I in an engineering program? But, you know, my mama worked at Chrysler, so she wanted me to be an engineer.
Okay.
I'm a poet. I'm an artist. Have you met me? So anyway, my high school counselor knew that, you know, I wasn't really in my element. And she was like, this is the thing you need to go to at Golightly, mass media communications.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, that sound like my speed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but she finagled it in such a way, instead of going in the morning, I went in the afternoon and I had my own bus to myself.
Oh, wow.
Because most of the kids went
in the morning.
Yeah. But because of my schedule, calculus and all this type of stuff, I had to go in the afternoons.
Yeah, I dropped all that. Trigonometry.
As a wrap on that, man, I couldn't get out of it. I'm an engineering program. But thank God for Golightly, because I was able to get an internship at WGPR.
Me too.
You did?
Yes.
When? How come we didn't see each other then?
Because first of all, I'm older than you. I don't mean to.
You know, black don't crack.
I ain't trying to, you know.
I'm just saying.
But I was actually in the very first year of that program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the very first year. That's probably why my counselor didn't know about it. It was brand spanking new. And so I was in the first year. I don't know how I should say the years. But anyway, I was in the first year of that program.
Yeah.
And they had a connection with WGPR.
Yeah.
And we would do the television and the radio side.
I was just on the radio side.
Yeah, they had a TV side. Team Profile. Yeah.
Wait, do you have any footage of this? Please tell me you have footage of your Team Profile days.
I do not. Now, it's probably somewhere.
It's somewhere in somebody's closet. And I also saw that you were a reporter for the Michigan Chronicle. I did that too.
Okay.
And we both came out of the Journalism Institute for Minorities.
Okay. And that was the first one for that one too.
Girl, you were just a trailblazer.
Like a pioneer. Like.
You know what I'm seeing here is that both of us from being from Detroit, we had to figure out a way to be creative, right? Because when the time came up, when we came up, creativity was not a thing in the D. It was like Motown was gone, crack was rampant, everybody working for General Motors, Ford, or Chrysler, and that's all they know.
Yeah.
So here we come, these unicorns talking about, I want to write plays and do poetry, and they're like, yeah, no, you got
to. Yeah, and that's another thing too. It's just like. So we went the journalism route. I think it was like journalism.
Yeah.
And, you know, no hate on journalism because I learned a lot because of
me
journalism.
Me too.
But I wanted to make movies.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was trying to make that program a Hollywood program. And that's not what it really was.
No, it's not.
So what I did was, I remember going to.
What happened was.
Okay, remember Mr. Barrett?
Yes.
We had four teachers.
Yes.
We had Ann. Mr. Dennis, Mr. Barrett, and Ken Sands.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember Mr. Barrett, I remember going to him and talking him into letting me take all this equipment home on the bus. Okay, I was on the bus.
No, girl, so, no.
Public transportation. I could have got robbed, knocked in the head.
Yes, anything. Absolutely.
But he let me take it home.
And you made a movie?
Yes, I got all the kids together and not on New Bern Street. New Bern is like two blocks long. I was like, all my friends together, like, y'all, I got this equipment for 24 hours. We had to make something.
Wow.
And we made a movie in 24 hours.
So you always known you wanted to be a storyteller in that sense?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How soon? How young were you when you realized, like, this is what I need to be doing with my life?
Okay. Well, it wasn't quite that. It was like a discovery.
Okay.
So I wrote my very first a story. I discovered my writing voice when I was 8.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I wrote a story for class. And the teacher saw it in me. And she told my mom, she's like, you know, she has a really good gift of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I kept writing these short stories. My mom had to force me to go outside and play with other kids. Like, get out of the room and go outside.
Stop playing in your head.
I want to stay in the house and write these stories. And this was pre-VH, I feel like I'm so old.
Girl, talk about it.
Pre-VH,
VHS. You're not saying 8-tracks, so you're good.
This is pre, well, you might as well say 8-track. This was pre the VCR. I had a tape recorder.
Okay.
I would tape record all my favorite shows.
Mm-hmm.
Good Times, The Jefferson, okay. All the Family, whatever it was.
Right.
And I would listen to it on repeat. I would listen to all my favorite shows.
Yeah.
If I was in a car with my parents, if I was just supposed to be asleep, whatever, I'm listening to my show.
Yeah.
And I think that's how I developed the knack for TV storytelling.
Right, right.
Just listening to the, it's mostly comedy.
Yeah.
Listening to the dialogue, laugh track.
Right, you know, right, right. You
know, multi-camera
type
stuff.
Right.
So that's how I think I developed the knack for storytelling. And then I got my friend who lived next door. I said, let's write a Laverne and Shirley. I had no idea people did this. I didn't really.
You didn't know? I didn't either. I had no idea what the people talking on the screen, that was somebody's job.
Right.
I didn't know that.
Right. Me either. I just watched Laverne and Shirley a lot. I'm like, let's write a Laverne and Shirley. And we had their voices down. Okay, if this happens, if something nasty happens, Lenny and Squiggy gonna come in. You know, it's like.
No, not Lenny and Squiggy. Oh my God.
Come in. So it's just like, it was just in me at a young age.
Yeah, so Okay, journalism. And then when did you decide that I'm really going to make that leap? Like, I'm going to, like, really go all in? Because you, listen, when I made the leap, it was just me. You made the leap with a baby. You had a whole human being to take care of. So tell me, what was that like? How did you find the strength to bet on yourself, but you're a single mother at the same time?
Well, the thing was, I came out here married. I came out here, I was married with a child. Mm-hmm. And we just made the move, you know, coming out here, and the plan was for me to learn screenwriting. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that my husband and I separated and I became a single mom. But, you know, I wasn't gonna change my quest, my journey. I wanted to still pursue it. It made it more difficult because, of course, you can't just think about what you need and what you want to do. Yeah. You have to be a mom. You have to be responsible. Mm-hmm. You have to get a job and you know, make everything else fit in.
Yeah. Well, that's why this is so important that you're sharing this, because there are so many people out there listening right now and watching who life be lifing. They have responsibilities and children or parents. And how did, try to speak to them and give them some advice about what you were able to do. You were able to find the balance, and you didn't give up your dream, but you still were being responsible. So share something about that.
Well, you know what? This is the thing. Things happen when they're supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And sometimes we want things right now.
Yeah.
We live in a microwave society where, you know, we want it to happen right this minute. Mm-hmm. And it's not always like that. And, mm-hmm. and it's a good thing it's not like that, because for me, I feel like through life experiences, it gave me more stories.
Mm.
Through the different things that I had to experience, it's like you write what you know.
Mm-hmm.
You write what you know. You create stories based on what inspires you or what you've experienced or what you've gone through or your struggles. And as a single mom, you know, trying to write at night,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, still having to deal with your child, you know, growing up. And then being too also miles and miles away from your family.
So that had to be hard, man.
So you had to kind of develop a support system.
Mm-hmm. You had to find your village.
You had to find your village.
Yeah.
You had to find your village. And so that in itself was a process.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and it's not like it comes with an instruction manual.
Right.
You don't know how this process works. You're just figuring it out as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
All you know is that you got this drive, you got this dream. And I know a lot of people in my life back in Detroit would be like, hey, well, why don't you come back home? You know, once the divorce, you know, took place, they were like, well, you sure you want to stay out there? It's always like you feel like you have to depend on someone else, but you have to depend on yourself at some point. And it wasn't always easy. I had a lot of you know, heartbreak stories, crying at night stories. But I knew what I wanted to do.
And how did that impact your son, seeing you still going after your dream no matter what? Did he, what was the impact on him?
I believe that, you know, he's the one who had the front row seat more than anybody.
Yeah.
He had a front row seat. He saw the disappointments.
Yeah.
You know, me staying up all night, submitting to all these fellowships and getting.
Oh, that fellowship game is real.
Oh, God. Getting those rejection letters. I had like a stack of rejection letters.
Me too. I was like Nino Brown, you know, counting money, all these rejection letters. It was like, really? Another rejection letter?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
It got to the point where I just expected it. I was just like, okay, let's put it.
Yeah.
But it's like he had a front row seat to seeing me stick it out.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, he actually was bold enough to say, Do you still think it's gonna happen?
Mm.
And I'm like, you know what? My attitude was like, I'm gonna write to the day I die. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if someone else values. It's like you put all this, people in this town put so much emphasis on validation of others.
Yes.
Does this person accept me? Does this network accept me?
Right.
You have to accept yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that was a gift that God gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I stopped looking for other people to
validate
me,
yeah.
And I said, you know, I'm doing this because I'm going to be that 8-year-old girl that likes to go in her room and write her story.
Right.
Because I like to write, read my own stories.
Right, right.
You know, I read them to the family. I like follow the family around. Listen to this. Make my brother sit down. Sit down and listen to this story. But yeah, it's just like you have to believe in yourself.
Yeah, you got to believe in yourself. And not only is it going to happen, it has happened, girl. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Is it cold X Wendy? Cold and Wendy?
It's cold with a K.
Yeah.
X Wendy, but it's cold and Wendy.
That's what I thought.
Cold and Wendy.
Cold and Wendy on All Black, right?
All Black.
Staff writer.
Yes.
Is it your second season doing this?
My second season.
Okay, well tell me about this. I mean, I know it was a long time coming, so how did it happen? I mean, how, tell me.
Okay, so what happened was, so Kenny Young.
We know, yeah, Kenny, yeah. Yes,
Kenny Young, he and I go back, actually it was Kenny and Carl back then. They had 1 week. I saw 1 week at Doughboy Dozens.
Doughboy Dozens.
Yes, that was so.
That was such a good time.
Oh my gosh. I used to drive all the way from Orange County to see it in the middle of the week. To go to Doughboys.
I mean, because you were running everybody at Doughboys. You might be sitting next to John Singleton.
Exactly.
Everybody rode through there.
Exactly.
So that's where you met Kenny and Carl.
That's where I met Kenny and
okay.
Carl.
Yeah.
Invited them to Organization of Black Screenwriters.
I was there too, girl. That's the first stop. That's like if you a black person in Hollywood, that's the first place you go.
OBS. Yes. OBS was like my second home.
Yeah.
And so I invited them. I was like, oh, come, you know, show your movie. And we developed a relationship. And then so at any time, they were always together in the beginning and making a lot of films. And I would see their films at the American Black Film Festival.
Yep, yep.
I think that was like 2007. They had Red Room.
Yep, yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just go to various things and run into him. So I would say like in 2019, I ran into him of all places at the grocery store.
Okay.
And I hadn't seen him in a long time, and he told me about Storytellers, which is a...
Right, he was doing a Storytellers thing with, was it screenwriters or was it all people?
It's all people.
Yeah, I mean, just like what I'm doing.
Anybody who wants to tell a story. So that's still going on. It's on Saturday mornings on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
It started out in person.
Yeah.
And you just come together and you tell stories.
Yeah.
So sometimes you can bring your own personal work. You can, you know, can share, get feedback. And I used to bring a lot of television pieces, like little mm-hmm. things, TV.
Yeah, because you was recording Laverne and Shirley. That's why.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And I told them that story, too. So he got a chance to see. I like, this girl's really passionate about TV writing.
Yeah.
And so one day, out of the blue, I'm like, this is 2021.
Yeah.
I'm at work because, you know, in this town, you got, you know, I don't care how Hollywood
you got to protect your gift.
You got to have a job.
Yes.
You have to have some kind of source of income
exactly.
coming in. And so I was at lunch. Phone rang in my hand. It was so like surreal. It's like if I was writing a movie about my experience, I would have wrote it just like how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Phone rang in my hand. It was Kenny.
Mm.
He never calls. I'm like, Kenny? Hey, what's up? So he's like, hey, Kim, I just wanted to tell you, I sold a TV show. Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is so wonderful. Do you want to write? Would you like to be interested in writing on it? Absolutely.
Wow.
That conversation lasted a whole, like, 1.5 minutes. It was like, I ain't ask no questions. I ain't say, what is it about? I ask nothing. I just said, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yes. Yes and yes. He's like, okay, cool. I'll tell you more information. You know, I know you're at work, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that's how it started.
Yeah.
And
what I love about that story is that, especially when you're trying so long to do something, you put so much on it about what it has to be or how it's going to happen. And then you just get a call. Because my mom always says, it's about who you know in this town, right? And you don't know when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen. So always be good to folks and stay in connection with people because you just never know. And that's how it happened. You get a phone call out the blue.
Out the blue.
And now you a TV staff writer. Oh, my God.
Yes.
That must have been very surreal for you.
It was very surreal. It was an answer to prayer.
Yeah.
I'm a believer in, like, speaking – life to your life and saying things that you want to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot to, you can complain about in this world.
Yeah.
It's a lot you can complain about in this town.
Yeah.
But I like to look at the glass half full.
Yeah.
And so I keep a journal.
Okay.
But I started writing, this particular year, I started writing my journal differently. Like, I have a journal where I write what I want to happen. And so when I write my journal entries, I write my day like I wanted it to happen. Like, and say, today I got a call and I got this. And I didn't write that specific thing. But what I'm saying is, what I want to happen, I start writing it so I can visualize myself doing certain things.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's beautiful.
And so I start writing like this, and I have a vision board, and I have all the things up that, you know, my son is really good with graphics.
Yeah.
And he made me a WGA, the cover of the magazine.
Oh, right.
And written by.
Yeah.
And he put my picture on the front of it.
Yeah.
And I put a little caption, like, Queen of the Emmys. Like, okay. So I'm, like, really out there, right?
No, girl, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. You're going to be the Shonda Rhimes of Detroit. I'm stop playing games.
So I have that on my vision board. Like, every day I see it. But I'm just saying, it's like you have to visualize what you want. You have to have some kind of goals, tangible things that you do to, you know.
Yeah.
I just feel like you just have to do that. I feel like our words are powerful and it's important what you say.
Your words are powerful and your mind is powerful. Like my husband, Rael, is a neuroscientist and he talks all the time about how the brain doesn't know the difference between what you imagine and what is real. Mm-hmm. So you have to put it out there. Your brain is like, oh, okay, so I want an Emmy? All right. So then the universe starts conspiring to make those things happen for you. And I'm glad you said this about journaling because I got to do that. Because my journal is usually about all the stuff that happened in the day and what went wrong and all this type of stuff. So I'm going to do that because that's a much better positive way of journaling. Because mm-hmm. I find myself not journaling because I've been doing it the wrong way all this time. So you just taught me something, girl.
You know what? I don't know. I feel like God just dropped that in my spirit. Like, this is what you just start writing down. You know, the Bible says, write the vision, make it plain.
Yeah.
I do know that's in the scriptures. And so it's like, you have to write down, you know, it's important to write down. There's something that happens.
Something magical that happens once it leaves your brain and hits the page.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't look at it again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I found notes around the house that I wrote about things for us, like our space here. I manifested this space like years before, like what I wanted and how I wanted to look and stuff like that. And I roll up and I'm like, I wrote this when? And then I look, I'm like, oh, everything I wrote is here.
You know what? I have a similar story. Now, this is real crazy. Okay, so I am not a runner, okay? I am just
a, no, you're not a marathon runner. You're not doing long distance.
But I wrote down marathon runner as a part of my vision board, but I never put it on my vision board. I put it somewhere else. And a few years later, a friend at work asked me to do a half marathon. And did I not do a half marathon? I was the very last person.
But you finished.
A bus was chasing me. We're like.
Wait. A bus was chasing you?
So this is a timed race, and you have so much time to get off the streets because they got to open it up for the rest of the cars, right? So here I am at mile 10, it's 13.1 miles. I'm at mile 10 thinking my life is coming to an end. And then my coach finds me and she's like, you gotta run. And she turns around, she says, they're gonna sweep you. There's a bus behind me.
Oh no.
And it chases me. And I literally found extra energy and strength.
I'm sure when the bus is on your ass, you're gonna find
like,
a way
I'm
to finish.
I'm not forfeiting this medal, baby. I'm from Detroit. I ain't going out like that.
No, that's not what we do, son.
I was the very last person. They were like, this is what she said. She says, you know, did they do something really cool for the last person? I said, there's 15,000 people in this race. I'm the last person.
You're the last person. 15,000
people. I had 15,000 people. Oh. So when I go through, Mickey, Minnie, Goofy, all of them, they throw ticker tape. They put me on the Jumbotron.
Oh, so you got all the shine because you were last.
Because I was the last one.
See, that's a lesson. Sometimes coming last is best. long as you finish.
As long as you finish.
Now, this is a perfect segue into your comedian situation. Like, I remember when I saw on Instagram that you were doing this, I was like, what? What is she doing now? And first of all, I've never had the guts to get up on stage and tell jokes. I mean, I think I can be a little funny sometimes, but to get up on tell me how, why, and how does that impact your, I mean, you're a natural storyteller. So is that what you do on the stage? Or is it an elevated version of that?
It's an elevated version of it, but the thing is, it's like it is a craft that is different from writing.
Okay, how is it different?
So the thing about writing is this. There's been so many close, I wouldn't say, my writing has gotten attention of different people.
Yeah.
But when I would get in the room,
yeah,
I would freeze.
Oh.
I would freeze up. I would just become so nervous that I just completely ruined the interview.
Mm.
And it just was not a good look. And so I was trying to overcome the fear.
So you got on the stage to,
I was trying to overcome fear.
So getting on the stage is helping you with your...
For my 50th birthday,
yeah,
that's what I said I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. On my 50th birthday, I called Flappers up. I had never
Girl,
even
you
been...
just be calling people, don't you? Hey, NASA, I wanna be an astronaut, and you need me. Is that what you do?
I called Flappers, and I said, hey, it's my birthday. I want to do stand-up. I had never even done open mic before. They were like, I said, I'm going to invite people. They didn't care. All they cared was I invited people. They were like, okay.
Right, that two-drink minimum is real.
We're giving you 5 minutes. And my brother was like, you doing what?
I know, everybody had the same reaction, right?
So they all came. I got up there and did my 5 minutes. And I was, surprisingly, I was not nervous the way I thought I would be.
Oh, wow.
Afterwards, I had a rush. It was like a rush.
So you're chasing that comedy high.
It was a rush.
Yeah.
Well, it was just really, really just for my birthday. But then Flappers sent me an email and booked me. They did. I cannot believe it. They booked me. They're like, are you available on this day or this day? And I'm like, what?
Wow. Wow. You got booked? Wow. That's crazy. That's amazing.
So then ever since then, I've just been doing it.
Wow. You know what? This is too much for me. I mean, let's talk about the piece that you submitted.
Okay.
Share what you want about what you submitted to be a work in progress for the show.
Okay. So, this piece is based on a job that I had. I've had a million jobs.
Okay. Like a Jamaican.
Like a Jamaican. I probably am Jamaican.
Did a DNA test. I did. It's all there. Yeah.
So, I worked at a trash company for 5 years.
You did? In Detroit?
Orange County.
Orange County? Was the trash cleaner in Orange County?
No, it was not. Trash is trash. Trash is trash. I don't care where you at. So it was because I lived in Orange County and I got a job working at the trash company.
Okay.
And that was the most unique experience I've ever had.
Wow.
I learned so much there. From the people to the critters that would just get inside the building and just run down the hall to...
Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting you to say critters. Are we talking like, you mean, okay, you know what? Keep going.
So, so I worked in HR. So I've been working in HR for a long time, but I worked in HR there. And I remember just like trying to overcome, the smell in the atmosphere.
Oh.
And I told my boss, I said, oh my gosh, I'm like, how do you guys get used to the smell? And she goes, it smells like money to me. That was her response. I was like, all righty then, okay.
So you're like, I'm a fish out of water.
So that's what this story is based on. It's based on the years I spent working at the trash company.
Oh.
And so the piece is like the first day of this particular character. It's her first day at the trash company. So that's what it's about. I'm interested to see. So I've done a few rewrites on it. And
yeah.
Every now and then I think of something else that I could add to it. But, you know, you can rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. Eventually, at some point, you just have to be like, it's mm-hmm. done. And, you know, it's a pilot because it definitely has legs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's lots of stories to tell.
Lots of stories to tell.
Okay, well, I'm excited for you to see.
Okay, I can't wait to see.
All right.
Sorrel starts walking and Holland trails behind her to the other side of the room. They find Mrs. Edwards, 77, a grandmother type, asleep at her desk. Sorrel clears her throat. Miss Edwards opens her eyes.
Ms. Edwards? Guess who's here?
Holland's POV, she keys in on her silk blouse, beige knitted sweater, pearl earrings, and gold locket. Alphanumeric results of salt of the earth. Miss Edwards puts on her glasses and looks up at Holland, and a huge grin grows on her face.
Beautiful. It's been years since you've been down here. You grew up to be such a lovely young lady. Spit an image of your mother. I saw this child come into the world and even witnessed the doctor smacking her on her bottom.
Oh, great, a family reunion.
My dad told me that story once.
Did he tell you I drove your mama to the hospital? God rest her soul. She was down here this very office and went into labor while OB was on a trash run. So I rushed into the delivery room.
Of course you did.
You've worked here a long time.
Since the beginning of time is more like it.
Your grandfather hired me when he bought this company. And I'm glad to see OB is keeping family in the business. Who knows? One day you may be running things around here.
A subtle wave of horror washes over Holland's face. Sorrel rolls her eyes.
I hate to interrupt this trip down memory lane. Holland has a lot to learn. I'm sure you can tell her all about the invention of the first trash truck on your own time. Besides, I just sent you an email about the payroll audit. You might want to get on that.
Done. I got it in between Let's Make a Deal and The Price is Right. We'll talk later, baby.
Miss Edwards winks at Holland, then turns on her TV program. Holland seems less than thrilled about the drab domain. The shelves are filled with manuals, policies, and union contracts. Holland sneezes a couple of times and grabs a Kleenex from her purse.
A morgue has more life than this place.
Well, there you go. What you thinking?
I always love to hear, you know, what people interpret it, and they read it, and it gives me good thoughts about, you know, where I could take it, or even how I can maybe even do a little tweaking.
Well, talk to me about the tweaking. What tweaking do you think?
I think, like, so. When you do rewrites, a lot of times I just do certain passes. When I hear certain, you know, the dialogue, sometimes I do a pass on just the action.
Mm-hmm.
Or I do a pass on, you know, some aspect of the script. But with certain words are funnier, like if they're spoken a certain way, or sometimes you can change a sentence around mm-hmm. where, or even cut down words. I find that with humor, less is more.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes when you say less, it can be funnier, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I even do that when I'm on stand up. You know, I usually get a tape when I'm on stage.
You and that tape recorder, girl.
Yeah.
Ever since you was 8.
Well, the club tapes it. The club will tape it, and yeah. I'll just get it, and I'll just, you know, I'll listen to it. I listen to all the laughs. I listen to things that I thought was a joke that is quiet, and I listen to things that I didn't think was funny, and people are laughing at it. So you get to, so try to be a little bit objective. And I think hearing it now, you put some distance between it, like when you write something, you just lay it down for a bit.
Right.
And so I haven't picked this up in a bit.
Okay, so it was like seeing it for the first time.
It felt like I was seeing it for the first time.
Okay.
So it inspires me to go back and look at the whole thing and see how I can, you know, tweak certain, you know, dialogue and just like punch up some, like do a punch up of some of the work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's good to be able to be objective like that, you know.
But distance helps though, right?
Distance definitely helps.
Because when it's too close to you, everything's funny and painful, and it's my baby, don't touch a word.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I learned a lot about, you know, on Cold and Windy, just being, you can't be married to any particular scene because things happen.
Right.
Things happen that is beyond your control, and you have to be on a dime's notice, be willing and ready to change it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually cried on one of my, I was like, I gotta let this go. Oh my God. I put a lot into this. But yeah, you have to give yourself some distance. You can't be married to something. You have to be willing to look at it objectively or make changes based on whatever the need is.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's the thing about television. It's very collaborative.
Right, right. Is that easy for a transition for you to make, the collaboration?
You know what? It was not hard because I've been in writers' groups.
All right.
You know, I've been in writers groups before, and you get the opinion of different people. But I guess when you're creating one thing, I mean, yes, you're responsible for that one script, but you still have to take notes from the network. You got to take notes from the producers, and you have to, you know, you have to take the note. You can't
ignore the note.
You can't just relax.
You're an idiot. You don't see my vision.
Exactly. That's how you become unemployed. So
this is inspiring you to just go back and look at it again.
It is.
And do some tweaking. Did you notice the casting change that we made?
Yes, I saw. That's another thing too. I said, okay, that was I wrote three females, but it was a guy. But you know,
Sarah.
Yeah, it was a guy. So, but it kind of worked because the way I wrote that character, she had masculine. She had a lot of masculine qualities.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, she had a lot of masculine qualities. And so I think the humor in the script is, I mean, you don't have everything there, but the person who's coming to work there is actually, she's like ultra feminine.
Yeah.
And she's working there kind of against her will. She just doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, I can imagine that, especially just from your point of view, right? You're dropped into this space. And this is everybody's lives. They work here. I love workplace comedies because you got all these people coming together. They're from different backgrounds and everything like that. And they're just working at the, like taxi. They're just working at taxi or Cheers. They're working at a bar or whatever. But they all have their different instincts. So this felt totally like that to me. So that's why I was like, I think I kind of have fun with this.
Well, you know, the thing about the trash company, it's not like I went out seeking a job there.
No, it wasn't your goal in life.
It wasn't like, hey, let me go work at the trash company. No, it was, okay, so my one job ended because they were moving to Timbuktu and I wasn't moving with them. So I pretty much just said, I'm out, peace. And I didn't have a job. I've never done that. And I'm like, I still have a mouth to feed. And so I went to the temp agency. And the lady at the temp agency was a hoot. Oh my gosh, she was just like, she read my resume. And she calls us. She says, I got the perfect place for you. It was a trash company. I didn't know this. So she's like, I got the perfect place for you. So she calls the people. And I had on there that I had some knowledge of Spanish. She's bilingual.
Oh, my God.
I mean, she'll say all this stuff.
All the things to get you the job.
And I was like, oh, my God. I'm like, she's on the phone with the people. I'm like, I'm not bilingual. And so she sends me there. It's the trash company.
Wow. So do you use, like, I mean, writers write what we know, right?
Yeah.
So do you get a lot of your ideas from your life and what's going on and things?
Every day.
All the things. So if somebody say something in front of you, you like, don't be saying that because I'm about to use it.
I'm going to tell you what I do.
Uh-oh.
I have post-it notes. If something happens, some of the stuff you just can't make up, I'm just like, okay. I put it in my purse and I get home, I got four post-it notes a day. And then I just... I have a book. Uh-huh. It says nothing but jokes on the front.
Okay.
And I put all my jokes in there, and then I go work them out. Sometimes I don't really feel it after the fact, but some things I was like, oh, this got some meat to it. I think I can work on this joke, and I just keep whittling it out. And then sometimes I go to open mic and I'll try it out. It's kind of hard to determine anything at open mic because these are all comedians, and comedians don't laugh at each other.
Oh no, they're hard asses. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like crickets in there, so you just up there.
But Cole and Wendy, that's a drama though, right?
That's a drama, but you know what? I was telling jokes in the room the first season, and they were like, Kim, this is a drama. We're not telling these jokes. I said, criminals laugh. Are you kidding? I said, we need to put some of this in here. Second season, the network's like, we need more humor. And I tell y'all.
Wow. See, there you go, wheeling it. Y'all don't know it yet, but I know what you need. Oh, man. Well, you know what? This has been beautiful.
Thank you.
These years we've known each other, and we've never had this whole conversation about, this is the thing. I'm inviting people on this couch that I want to talk to, right, and I'm curious about, that I'm inspired by, that I've been watching from afar, and I know that when our conversations hit the air, that we will inspire other people. So your whole story has been so funny, first of all, hilarious. And inspiring, because life was lifing for you, girl.
Life is lifing.
And you found a way, you know, talk yourself into things, call people up, getting jobs, manifestation.
You know what? I remember I was 5 years old.
Oh, here we go.
When I didn't know I wanted to be a writer, I thought I wanted to be an actress. And remember the music hall?
Yeah.
The music hall commercial came on, and it had the number. And that picture,
did you call?
I called them.
Kim!
I was five.
Kim!
I called them and I said, do y'all got kid actors down there? That's exactly what I said. The lady was like, where's your mother? Like, why are you on the phone?
Why are you calling the music? Oh my God. Girl, okay. I already know what you're going to do. If I need something handled, I'm just going to say, Kim,
call him.
Please, please. Okay, before I let you get back out of here, girl, tell me, do you have any advice, anything else you want to share with the folks? I mean, your life is so inspiring and
thank
hilarious,
you.
Like I said.
Thank you.
You know, you start from the bottom, now you're here, boo-boo. What can you share?
What I would share with people is just to not give up on your dream.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry about what it looks like. Mm. You have to have that vision. Write down your vision. Mm-hmm. Write down your vision. Be around positive people. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't be around dream killers. Mm-hmm. If somebody doesn't see your vision, you can't share everything with everybody. Mm. And do the work. Mm-hmm. You have to do the work. You know, I've taken a ton of classes, a ton of workshops. Read a lot of scripts, or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be necessarily screenwriting, but whatever it is that you are passionate about, put the work in, and it happened when it's supposed to happen.
All That's right, what I believe. Let the church say.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you for coming, girl. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. Good to see you.
Oh, we got Ann Eskridge.
Yes, she was our teacher, writing teacher at Go Lightly, mm-hmm. and continue to be our mentor.
Yes, to this day.
To this day. Yes. In fact, that's how I met you, through Ann.
Yep, she said, you need to find her. And I was like, okay.
Yep.
This has been beautiful. Thank you again, Kim.
Thank you. All right. I appreciate you.
Bam, I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for supporting Works in Progress. See you next time.